freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a criminal.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go. It's a Brock and Salk podcast. Hello, sir.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good. Our like 8 to 10 minutes a day is not enough. It certainly wasn't this morning, Wednesday. We needed more to delve into some of what's going on with Pete and Russ and all of it. I need you around because, you know, a lot of people think I'm nuts.
Because everyone thinks you just stir up the drama.
Right.
You and boy Howdy stirring things up.
I know that I do lean towards drama, and I'll admit there is a way you could spin this where it's like kind of drama free. Like, yeah, what happened? Russ screwed up. Pete called him out. He held him accountable. They move on. End of story. That's it. Like, yeah, that could be the whole story.
But what fun is that?
Well, it's not just what fun is it. I mean, yes, I guess there's an element, but does that pass your smell test that it's as simple as that? After what went on in the offseason and Russ and the trade demands or non-demands and Pete kind of being quiet and, yeah, maybe they talk but never really fully worked it out. It's hard for me to imagine, and this is now extrapolation as opposed to just fact, that everything we've heard here in the last couple of days, and we'll run through some of the sound together, that it's all just a whole lot of nothing. It just seems like too much smoke for that.
Maybe year one or two of a marriage where you're just working through the bumps. Right. But this is year 10.
Right.
You've been married a long time. And in fact, this offseason was probably the first time you had significant marital counseling. I mean, maybe even the separation. And I heard your analogy with the Graz father, and I thought it was a pretty good one that Pete just let Russ cry it out this offseason and just kind of was like a parent said, okay, go ahead, have your little tantrum, go up to the room, go ahead and get your buddies involved, you know, go tell your buddies how terrible your parents are and how you wish they weren't your parents, and how you could go live somebody, go ahead, do your little tantrum thing. Well, and then it all went away, right? Then it all kind of disappeared until adversity hits.
Mm-hmm.
And adversity hit Sunday in that building in a loss in a game you should never lose. Up 14 in the fourth quarter, you should never, ever lose that game at home. And in fact, they never had as long as Pete has been there. Well, only one other time, right? 2004 with the Rams. So, yeah, so a little adversity's hit. And then what happens? Then we get a little, then it kind of rises back up to the surface again. And I don't think you're creating drama or I'm creating drama or anybody's creating drama out of nothing. There is something to this relationship.
Well, something's going on. And when you talk to, look, I talked to G a little bit today and he's like, yeah, it's all anybody's talking about over there. I mean, like, we're not the only people who are seeing this. There's something's going on. By the way, I use that cry it out analogy, and I had somebody point out to me that, hey, don't compare Russell to a baby. And I think that's a fair point. Neither of us are trying to say that Russell's a baby. It's just making an analogy of like, well, no, you're not. No, you're not. Stop it. It's just trying to make the point. And I think it's fair to just clarify it. You know, Brock, sometimes I say things and people take it differently from how I meant it.
Yes.
That no one thinks Russell is a baby. It's just the attitude of like, hey, you're going to do this and I'm going to ignore it. And that is the best way for us to move on, is similar to what parents do when they let kids cry it out. So, yeah, we can run through some of the sound here. Then we can get to the end, which is like, how does this thing eventually like work itself out? There was a bunch of Pete stuff. I won't play all of it. There was Pete saying, here's one. Here's Pete saying from last week. This wasn't even this week. This was last week when I asked him about Shane Waldron and what he had done best in his week one victory.
Our ability to sight and pick up the blitz. Why this is Shane Waldron is because he's open-minded enough to do things that we've done in the past.
Oh, nice.
As in, yeah, whatever complaints you may have heard about me and my offense, this guy's still doing some of it. He's still open-minded to what we've done here. It piqued my interest last week for sure. Mm-hmm. But when I hear it again in the context of the loss and some of the other stuff, okay. You also had Russ say after the game that, now this is in context, he said more than this, but he said, well, we did score 30 points. Right? Like, well, we did score 30.
Yeah.
You did. And he went on to take some responsibility and this and that and say it wasn't enough. But hey, well, we did score 30.
Right.
And you kind of scored 30. I mean, you did. They scored 30 points. Yep. Seven of them came directly as a result of the defense giving you a, what, 10-yard field or whatever
and it was. And seven of busted fumble. Coverage that you never see.
That's right. So 13 of your 30 points came directly either from the defense or from the other team gifting it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you still did it. Like, I don't want to take that away.
That's right.
But A, okay, and B, you needed 33. I don't know what to tell you. Like, this was a day where you needed 33 points, not 30. And so when we asked Pete about Russ and how he played in the game, this was the answer.
I thought Russ took advantage of the game well until we had a play action pass, and I wish we could have, controlled the ball and checked the ball down there. Took a shot at Tyler, and then we went up to DK on second down, and then our opportunity escapes us right there, and they get the ball inside the 40. So that sequence was the one. I wish Russ could have helped us there, this made completions for us. We needed to just move the ball there and change the field position at least in overtime, because you're playing field goal right there, and unfortunately we didn't get it done.
You got to really listen to Pete, because he doesn't change tone when he says something like that. Mm-hmm. It's all said in the same flat tone. So you don't hear any difference between Russ played great and I really wish Russ would have done something differently there.
You don't get the Mike Vrabel. That falls in the category of dumb bleep that ruins a game.
It's not overt. You have to actually listen, and then it almost helps to read it, because when you read it, you're like, oh, okay. Like, he says it all in the same tone, and it's all, hey, Russ did great. I wish he would have done something differently in the last two possessions, and that's not what we needed there. So it's he doesn't change his tone to help point out the difference.
Yeah.
But he's certainly saying that.
Yes. And, facts and data are hey, this was the – still had a QB rating of 128. I mean, I think it was the second best rating in a loss in 10 years. I mean,
over 300 yards.
That usually, a 128 rating, you win 95% of the games. But, this game has become a situational game. It always has been. It just feels like it's that much more. And if you want overt – I went back and watched the end of that in that series you're referencing. If you want overt, go watch Dwayne Brown on the third down.
On which one? The
final third down that should have been a safety.
Yeah.
He is irate. I mean, he is overt Mike Vrabel. I would have loved to have heard him mic'd up.
What do you think he was mad about?
Oh, he is ticked at Russ for scrambling and doing the whole loop-de-loop and putting himself at the half foot line, because he knows, like, crap, now we're going to punt and put them where we just lost.
Yeah, Hasselbeck said some of that too. I mean, Pete kind of mentions that you can't put yourself in an even worse position. Hasselbeck said,
correct.
You got to know places and times on the field and in the game where you cannot go backwards, and that's one of them, because of short
where
punt
you're
situation.
At. I mean, yeah, you punt, you give your punter an opportunity to have a full snap if it's at the 12-yard line. We've seen him hit 75-yard bombs.
Yeah,
he could totally flip the field. You put him at the 1-inch line, he's got to rush the punt. There's no chance.
Yeah, I think they probably still lose either way. Like, I think you lost the moment you gave them the ball a second time in overtime, needing just a field goal, but I think you're right. It that's a death knell as soon as you kick it from
they get
from
the ball at the 40-yard line instead of maybe their own 40, and who knows? Maybe there's a sack. You call the game differently. You play a different defense. Your defense doesn't have tail between the legs coming out on the field. So that was, that was a critical error for a guy 10 years in at that moment that has been nothing but a winner. He named his son Win for a reason, because that's what he's done, and that was not winning football. It wasn't winning football on even, heck, the previous, series where, what are we doing? Why are you throwing it in the flat? Like, why are you taking up all that time? No.
Oh, to Travis Homer?
Yes.
Yeah, that wasn't great. And how about the series before that when they had the chance to ice it?
So all of those three series, I mean, that's what the coach is going to point to. And frankly, that is what comes when you're making, and not only, this is not a, salary cap, he's making so much money. It's not that rant. It's just reality. You're the dude. You're the captain. You're the dude. And in winning time in your building up 14 in any of those possessions in the fourth quarter, right? This kind of reeks and smells like that Super Bowl loss where you're like, man, just don't go three and out. Double-digit lead, that's a time where you got to possess the ball. Don't give King Henry another opportunity on his throne to keep ramming it down your throat. Don't do that. Own the ball. Own the possession. And they didn't do it. And I think the coach has every right in that moment to challenge quarterback and the decision-making in those moments.
So what does this all mean? I mean, we can sit here. I mean, I think you and I see it very similarly. And that's not to say the defense is off the hook for this game. I mean, they didn't play a great game.
No, they played a really bad game. They gave up 530 yards of offense, but 300 yards to Tannehill,
really bad.
And over 200 yards rushing.
They gave you the ball and a chance to win in overtime after you lost the coin toss, right? They did come up with a stop. It was 15 yards farther back than you would
have
liked.
And you would have loved to have Jamal Adams to keep his cool.
That would have been
Jamal
great.
Jamal Adams played a poor game in a lot of different spots,
but,
too.
But at the end of the day, the defense gave Russell Wilson the ball with two opportunities to win. I mean, you can get mad at them. They're not the best defense in the world, and they were exposed at times in this game. But they gave Russell Wilson two chances to win the game, and he's Russell Wilson.
And that's the margin that Russell Wilson is going to carry this entire year. And whether he or his team, his whole team doesn't like it, that's the reality of this situation in Seattle.
So what does this
every other 31 marriages in the league, right, between head coach and quarterback, and not even 31 because you don't have 31 other franchise QBs, but the elite franchise quarterbacks, the camp and the tier that he finds himself in, you know, they share in some places a very similar fate. This team goes as you go. This team will go as far, and I think I said that a couple podcasts ago, as Russell Wilson goes. If he plays MVP caliber, they have a chance to win the division. If he doesn't, they won't. And heck, they could finish third or fourth in this division, as deep and talented as it is this season.
So what does this all mean? I mean, we had Greg Bishop on the show here on Wednesday, and you know, I had him on to talk Mariners, because he wrote a really good piece in SI about Jerry Dipoto and the rebuild and kind of what it all means. It was really good. But as long as he was here, as we know, Greg has gone in depth with Russ, has gone in depth with the Seahawks. He's a really great storyteller and knows a
super
lot of what's going on. Very well connected with Sports Illustrated, and this was, I thought, a pretty telling comment.
To me, it speaks to the tenuous nature of the franchise quarterback in the NFL. You know, I think that what you see are some hurt feelings, you know, from last spring and summer, you know, the trade demand that wasn't a trade demand and all the teams that he could play for. And, you know, beyond that, I think that, you know, you got to fall back on the slogan my wife put on a t-shirt for me. Haters going to have some good points. And I think that there are points that Pete made that are totally fair, that could be improved upon, that could be ultimately done better. You know, to me, this looks like, short of a big time year, a Super Bowl appearance, a Super Bowl victory, I would say that it's pretty possible, if not even likely, that this is the last year that they're together.
Tenuous. I like that word. I think that's going to be a theme for the next 14 weeks or so as we evaluate this. I think that's exactly the right word from Greg Bishop at Sports Illustrated, who's a wordsmith himself. And when he says tenuous there, he does it in the big picture, looking at all of the franchise relationships, looking at Big Ben in Pittsburgh. Yeah, it's a tenuous situation. He's at the end of the rope. Looking at Aaron Rodgers and his man bun in Green Bay. Yep, that's a tenuous situation each and every week. Is it tenuous in Tampa Bay? Well, they won a Super Bowl. It was certainly tenuous the first 10 weeks of their marriage last year, right? And being a wild card team and everything else. I mean, it's...
And it was tenuous. I mean, the biggest comparison is it was tenuous in New England
with
Belichick and Brady, and everyone wanted to say it wasn't until it was over.
Absolutely. Where is it not tenuous? Where do you have somebody in his tier... At his level, where you know, heck,
Kansas
even with
City.
Drew Brees and Sean Payton in New Orleans the last
right now
few
in
years.
Kansas City, it's not tenuous.
That's true.
Right now. That doesn't mean that won't change in a couple of years. We'll see what happens if they don't make the playoffs or something funky happens. But right now, I would say that is not tenuous.
maybe Baltimore with a young player and Lamar won his mega deal.
Seems
and wants his money.
Still.
That's tenuous.
What about New York with Daniel Jones? Don't you think that feels rock solid?
Yeah. Actually, no.
Okay,
Mike.
Not with the Giants. Okay, well,
no.
I was just trying to come up with a, you know, really solid. I mean, the Giants they're always on TV, national TV, so I figured that was sort of a rock solid relationship. You know, like Dak in Dallas, pretty solid. They're always on TV also, so you know it's like, it's rock solid.
Never tenuous.
No.
Never tenuous.
What about Taylor
is?
Heineke? That guy's rock solid in Washington. I'm told he's the second coming. Sorry.
Yeah. Are you done?
I'm done. You mentioned the word tenuous. I know the easy thing, obviously, is to go to what he said at the end, which is, this thing may come to an end soon. Before we get there, what did you make of the phrase hurt feelings? This is a matter of hurt feelings.
Yeah, I think that's valid and real, probably on both sides. That I think for some time, Russell has felt, you know, a bit hurt by the way they built this team. I think his are probably more business-like feelings, maybe not... You know, as sensitive or as personal or whatever, a little bit more professional, you know, feelings like, hey, man, I need more. He was pretty black and white with that, that I need a better supporting cast, I need to be protected up front, I want superstars. He's done that the last couple of years. So I think that's where his feelings are maybe a little more professional. Yeah. And yeah, I think for Pete and John and, you know, that entire crew upstairs that tries to build this team and do all they can and build a special culture and have a place that just oozes positivity and loyalty in ways that the NFL doesn't, and Mr. Good Cop himself, Pete Carroll, and all of that, sure. Sure, I think it probably hits them a little bit more personally. John Schneider, you know, those guys probably hits them a little more personally than it does a Russell, who's, I mean, frankly, pretty calculated, man, right? I mean, he's pretty scripted.
He is. He went off script in the offseason a little bit, you know, for the first time and spoke out. You know, I would argue, and I think this piece of sound is part of the whole story, which is Colin Cowherd saying this week that Russell Wilson is the only thing good in Seattle, is Mark Rogers 101. That's Russell's agent, Mark Rogers. Here's a little of Colin.
Russell Wilson fools you into believing Seattle is a well-oiled machine.
By the way, how great is Colin Cowherd? Just the way he even, I mean, that's so, as a radio host, that's just so great.
And I'll ask the question that I asked in the offseason. What does Seattle do well that Russell Wilson isn't connected to?
All right, by the way, there's only so many ways you can answer that. He's the quarterback. He's connected to literally everything in the offense. So, all right.
Take out Russell, they rush for 60 yards.
Take out every quarterback and you only... I mean...
They had 10 penalties for 100 yards. They were dominated in time of possession. Their run defense was gashed. Tannehill threw for over 300 yards. Their drafting strategy in recent years has been weird as Pete Carroll suddenly has more control in the draft. Their seventh-round running back is markedly better than their first-round running back. Russell makes everything work.
Where does that little Pete draft thing come in? I mean, most of it's just regular Colin Cowherd stuff, and I love arguing with Colin. That's part of the fun of Colin Cowherd is arguing with him, and he's pretty good-natured about that stuff.
Yeah.
But where does that little snippet of information come in of, oh, yeah, Pete Carroll's taking a bigger role in the draft and it's not working? That comes directly from someone like Mark Rogers, if not himself.
Yeah, and I don't know if I believe that.
There's no evidence of that.
Nope, I don't get any sense with that. I've not heard that. I've not heard the war room change at all. I mean, basically what he is.
It was true. I thought that Pete had a smaller role in it these days compared to when he knew all the players from college. Isn't that the knock on Schneider from some folks? Oh, John's not as good now that Pete doesn't know all the players? I like the only way Colin would come up with that is if that was fed to him. And the only person that would feed him something like that, who has a specific reputation for doing so, is Mark Rogers.
Mm-hmm. And relationship. I mean, Colin's got relationship with Russell's camp, be it Mark or be it Russ himself. I mean, he's, I think over the years, has shown that he is pretty connected. This is Colin into that camp. That he has people there that, as you said, kind of feed him intel and information, and that is going to be, and we have heard that for some years, and we have certainly heard that after seasons of disappointment, seasons that fall short, seasons where you don't lift the Lombardi trophy, because that's the expectation. That's what Russell Wilson wants. He wants to be the greatest of all time. He wants to be Tom Brady. And the sand is ticking away.
Yeah.
And the time is ticking away. Well, and you're a decade in now.
And if you're Pete, you only have, I mean, you just turned 70 literally a couple of days before this.
You can't rebuild this team.
No, that's on your mind. I just turned 70 and I got to deal with this. I'm sure how Brock felt when he stepped away from doing a daily show a couple of years ago. Like, unfortunately, I'm getting older and I've hitched my horse to this stupid wagon.
Yeah, very true. And now I got the poor guy. He's got an eye twitch. Now when I watch him on the little clips in the morning, dude's got a tick.
It's because I wake up too early. That's a 4 a.m. wake-up call is giving me ticks.
It's because you need to go with glasses, okay? You're getting near
that.
The point
no,
that I'm getting
it's
near.
That. It's not yes. that. My vision is perfect, except right in front of me, and it doesn't happen when I'm reading. Okay. You know what? You worry about yourself. I'll take care of my own
about
eye
yourself,
ticks. I'll worry about my own eye ticks over here.
So here's what I said to you on Wednesday morning, though. Okay, here's what I did say to you.
Okay.
The ball is in Russell's hands. What card is he going to play? Is he going to just let his team and his camp kind of speak for him, and he's going to be the good teammate, and he's going to be the good soldier, and he's going to take every arrow, and he's going to take full responsibility, and he's going to say, yep, I need to get rid of the ball. Coach is absolutely right. I'm held to a different standard. That's the position I play. That's why I get paid when I get paid, and this is on number three. And number three has got to be better in the biggest moments, and I aim to be. Is that what he's going to do this week? Because I sure hope so.
I don't think he's going to say anything.
I think his left tackle wants him to.
Oh, I don't think he says anything. I think he's just kind of like, yeah, it's nothing.
You think they do a fake little thing like they did in the training camp where Pete comes in to smiles?
I don't think so. I think they
we love each other.
I think they're just like, non-story, and they move on.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to address it. Because
we're on to Minnesota?
Well, no, they'll do it in their way. I mean, they're not like Bill Belichick. They're not going to say that. But yeah, I think Russell will give a bunch of stock answers, cliches. Pete will say everything's hunky-dory, and they'll move on. But that doesn't mean it is. It's just what, kind of what they're saying to get on to the next day.
Kind of ramps up the pressure in Minneapolis, doesn't it?
It sure does. You start 1-2 and lose to Kirk Cousins and Ryan Tannehill in back-to-back weeks. Yeah, I think it does ramp up some of the pressure. And then I also kind of find myself trying to figure out, okay, well, how do I feel about either of these two guys? Because I agree with Pete here. I think Russ was very much at fault for what happened in the game on Sunday. I think Russ had a pretty good point about the offensive line in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as good a point about what needed to happen to modernize the offense. That's just my take on it. But I also know this. For years, I mistakenly thought that Bill Belichick was much more important than Tom Brady. I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I have now learned that Tom Brady is more important than Bill Belichick. Now, your boy Matt Hasselbeck made a really good point in talking about this last week. He said, careful saying that, because everything Brady is bringing to Tampa, he learned from Belichick. It's a great point.
True.
Really, really good point that I had not thought of. But once you've created the monster, which is what Belichick did with Brady, I think it's now fairly safe to say that Brady and that monster is more important than the creator. Frankenstein's monster is more important than Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
So Pete's created Russ. He's 10 years into this thing. It's not like he's a rookie who's just starting to learn this whole thing. Russ is a mature football playing quarterback. So who's more important right now? As much as I might agree with what Pete's saying over what Russ is saying, I have to look at it just based on like the way my worldview has shifted and say, unfortunately, I think Russ as a quarterback is harder to find and maybe more important.
Yep, and we'll see.
And that's only starting franchise quarterbacks. That's not elite clipboard holding backup quarterbacks. We're talking franchise quarterbacks only in terms of importance.
I know, there it was. I knew when I brought up the iTick, something like a boomerang was going to come right back at me. I know you owe so well.
Right.
So I knew a shot would be coming back. Well, I think the 49ers with George Seifert won another title with QB, and I think Aaron Rodgers has been just fine without Mike McCarthy. I think he's not won a Super Bowl, but he's
how Barry Switzer do?
Did he win a title? Championship games? Yeah, Barry won a title with Troy and that whole crew, and that position's pretty important, and that's why the pressure is going to be ramped up on both of these guys.
Yeah, Bill Walsh won another Super Bowl, right? Without Montana, didn't he win with Steve Young?
I think he did. Yep,
so, it's not like it can't go the other way. Montana never won again, and he won with Steve Young.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the game has changed a lot since then, and I think it's so hard to find these guys. I don't know. It's a brutal conversation.
Well,
I'm not taking a side just yet, but I'm just kind of giving you my thinking.
Okay, here's what I hope. Here, let me cut through my feelings for both of those camps and parties as well. At the end of the day, here's what I hope. I hope that neither loses faith in the other.
You don't think
because
that's happened
yet? Because if they do, they have no chance to win this division. No chance.
So you don't think that's happened yet?
I don't think it's happened yet. I think that Pete, said, hey, man, we'll make a change. I'll bring in a new coordinator. We'll try to innovate offensively and do some more things and appease you and all the gimmies and all that fun conversation. And let's modernize this thing a little bit. And it'll still be some of our language and some of our, some of our football that we've known for a long time, but let's modernize it. And I think that was in good faith, right, relationally to do that. Now, as the season plays out, what can't happen is, and I don't think the team has no other answer, so I guess it's really Russ. I hope when push comes to shove that Russ still trusts and has faith in Pete and the team and that whole building. Because I can't imagine Pete losing trust, not going to Geno Smith. There's no other answer. I mean, he is totally
hitched.
That's
all he's got. This is
it. That's all he's got.
It's funny. I keep coming back to what you said last week or a couple of weeks ago when both Duane Brown and Quandre Diggs came back to the team. And you said, everything's great. Let's see what happens when there's adversity. And I just can't help but notice the fact that on the first 60-yard run, the first really bad play that the defense had all year. There was Quandre Diggs smashing his helmet against the ground. Now, I don't know why he did it, so I don't want to, you know, extrapolate too much. I don't know why. I don't know whether he's mad at himself or whether he's mad at someone else or whatever, but in that moment, I saw a really frustrated guy. And then later in the game, as you mentioned, who was the most frustrated with the near safety at the end of the game? Dwayne Brown.
Yep.
It's remarkable how much, and I didn't choose that. I didn't even notice it really until, like, man, what Brock said, like, it did kind of come true. So now you have Pete and Russ. Did they really put things to bed over the off season? We don't know, but the moment they lose, there's some back and forth between them. And Dwayne Brown and Quandre Diggs, two guys that come in for not really any more money, the moment there's a little bit of adversity, their anger comes right back out. And it's crazy how hard it seems to be to put that stuff back in the box.
Crazy hard the NFL is, man. Crazy how difficult it is, because the line and the margin is that thin. You're not getting to play West Texas A&M, you know, directional. You're not. Everyone's good.
Right.
Okay, Henry is amazing. He is amazing back. Tannehill and Julio Jones and A.J. Jones. And this week, you know, Justin Jefferson is elite. You know, the receiving core is good. Dalvin Cook is excellent. Mm-hmm. They've got great players. Like, it's just every single. Yes, every team does. And we haven't even got to this division that's 6-0.
You don't get Arkansas State. Not everybody gets that.
No, you don't.
That's a nice gift to
Thank
be given.
Thank goodness we got some Arkansas State. Thank
Not
goodness.
Not everybody gets a nice get-right game like Arkansas State or Montana, for instance.
You don't. I mean, you don't have a breather in the season, honestly. You just don't. Doesn't matter who you play in this league, especially in the first half of the year where everybody's got optimism and everybody is still alive and there's sense of urgency everywhere.
Well, so you go to that and the tenuous nature. I would just say it's relationships. I don't think it's just that the NFL is that close, although it is. We see this everywhere, right? Things are looking better, and Scott Service done a great job with this clubhouse. Oh, we're unhappy for 1 minute? This organization doesn't care about winning. Whoa, all right. Like, I thought we had kind of worked. No, you traded my friend, and I don't care. You don't care about winning.
Kevin Mather, remember what he said? It all comes back.
It's amazing how quickly, like, as much as you feel like you've worked through things, and you talk about them, and you manage to it, and you coach to it, or whatever the case is, the underlying stuff is so hard to make it really go away.
Teams are aircraft carriers. Mm-hmm. You can't turn an aircraft carrier just because you turn the wheel left. It takes a long time to get it to move.
A lot of trust, a lot of equity, a lot of time, right? Time on task, too. Yeah, this is going to be a fascinating, fascinating story as it evolves. And will be very fascinating Sunday if, again, adversity presents itself and you have an 0-2 Minnesota team that could very easily be 2-0, right? And overtime losses and field goals, and they can't go 0-3. I mean, so you're going to get their absolute best shot. And oh, by the way, in your building last year came down to one play, right? Came down to a fourth down stop that you had made. Otherwise, you lose to them last year. So, yep, buckle up.
Buckle up for game day too, huh? Sunday, Famous Dave's, little game day. Little authentic barbecue.
I was hoping you were going there.
I think you knew I was going to, right? A little classic Q goodness. High quality meats. Trim them up like they're in a competition. The pitmasters have that hickory log smoldering in the smokers all day long. They're hand rubbing the meats. Proprietary blend of spices. Slow cooking it to perfection. That's why they've won more than 700 awards, Brock. Famous Dave's an authority in the barbecue world. Should we go through some of what you can get for game day?
Yes.
Anybody up for that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Menu highlights for game day. The All-American Barbecue Feast. Full slab. 12 bones.
Eat it all.
That's my favorite.
Eat it all.
St. Louis style spare ribs. That's the best. But you can go whole country roasted chicken if that's what you're into. You can go half pound of either the Texas beef brisket
or the Georgia.
Georgia chopped pork.
You can't pass on Georgia.
Don't ignore the Georgia chopped pork. Creamy coleslaw, famous fries, Wilbur beans, sweet corn, cornbread muffins, all for only $79.99. That'll be served family style for 4 to 6 people. Appetizers from Brock. I know you love this. Burnt ends. Where are you? You're big on burnt ends. Is that you that's
big?
Right. Big on burnt ends.
Big burnt ends.
Southside rib tips. Well, I don't even really know what that is. What's a rib tip?
You know how there's little cap on the end of a little thing that hangs off? Split that off kind of like burnt ends.
Is it good?
Oh, yeah.
I think I've ever had that.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Well, that sounds pretty good. All right. Refreshing salads. I missed the onion ring. Sorry, the onion strings. Even better. You got wings. You got burgers. You go dessert. You go award-winning bread pudding. Let's go. Can we stop? Let's get out of here and just go eat. FamousDaves.com. Shouldn't the Mariners be gone by now? Weren't they supposed to be gone?
Well, they were going to move to Tampa in 95.
Not that far gone. Oh. That's not what I meant. This team won't die. It's awesome. I'm just so enjoying watching. I'm so glad that even after the Red Sox loss last Wednesday, they kind of felt like, all right, that they gave it a good run, right? They were right there and unfortunately just couldn't quite seal the deal. Kelnick's, you know, line drive goes 18 inches too far to the right, and that was it, right? They completely imploded after that. It just kind of felt like, okay, it's too much. But as we should have come to expect with this team, while mathematically it became nearly impossible, and while even both Scott and Jerry referenced, like, yeah, things are going to be pretty hard now, this team doesn't give up, man. They just go out there. They keep battling. It's awesome. No, it's so fun.
They just will. They will not give in.
I love them.
They will not relent. And I think there's a bunch of cool reasons. Curious kind of what some of yours are at the very top of the list. But I think you got quite a different mix, you know, quite a different group in that clubhouse of young guys aiming to prove they can belong, mid-tier guys trying to prove that they want their contract extension, and veteran guys trying to prove that they still want to be around next year.
I know, and you say that, but it's funny. I get that argument, but we've just seen it too many times in baseball where guys are like, yeah, it's September, we're out. Football season. See ya. And I don't just mean in Seattle. I just mean like baseball players in general. It's a long year, right? You're pretty well done at the end of it, and you just check out. And they haven't done that at all. If anything, the intensity has been right there, just as high, if not higher, for this series against Oakland and what we saw against Kansas City, where they went into their building, kind of did their thing. Yeah, I understand that as a natural reason.
So I look at it from a business perspective, a little bit just kind of cold calculating business that, you know what, that you got a bunch of these guys incentivized right where you want them to be to play 162, to not sit it in shutdown mode. Cal Raleigh and Jared Kelnick and some of the guys trying to prove that they belong. You know, as I said, those mid-tier guys, the Hanigers, the J.P. Crawfords, a number of your pitchers trying to say, hey, man, I'm worthy. And then even, you know, a veteran like Kyle Seager that's got a $15 million option and Kikuchi. Well, never mind with Kikuchi. But I kind of look at it in that way, just a straight dollars and cents. You can't shut it down because you got too much to prove.
Could be. It could also just be they're pitching well. I mean, like, as much as everything else, like everything you just said makes sense from a mentality standpoint, they've gotten pretty good starting pitching. Anderson's pitched well. Marco's pitched pretty well.
Logan's pitched well.
Yeah, Logan Gilbert's been great. He seems like, I mean, and he's in a different spot. He's just starting to figure this out. Flexen's just been good. So, like, you've got four starting pitchers of your five that are just pitching well, and your bullpen's good. So it's not like the offense has gone crazy and scored more runs for them in the last few weeks. Nope. Yeah, Crawford still does his thing because that guy loves to play. And I don't think it matters whether he's playing for anything. I think that guy could be playing a rec league softball game, and he'd still bust his tail to first base because that's what he does. I think he'd still
make hot one weekend. Haniger gets hot for 4 days.
Yeah,
Kyle with some big hits.
And that's enough when you combine it with the fact that they're just pitching well. Very simple. So why won't they die? Why won't they go away? Why do they have some of the stick-to-itiveness? I think it's partly just they pitch well and partly because of their character and their manager and what's been instilled in them and the culture built. I know it's fragile. We talked about that earlier. But I think they've built something where regardless of what happens, they go out there and they bust it. It's great.
They do. Yeah, and I do think that Crawford, I said that 3-4 months ago, that, man, I think way back in May, like, gosh, this guy's just the straw, isn't he? He's just the straw that stirs it. He's just got an energy to him. It's infectious. He just loves to play. And that's hard to find in baseball, especially the grind of a season. And maybe a guy can do it for a month. Maybe he can do it for the first half. That guy's energy has not relented one bit from beginning to game 150 now into this season.
And it's funny. Well, his energy is so uber positive all the time, and the joy and the smile. Kelnick's energy does not relent either. It's a different kind of energy. It's more of an intensity and a competitiveness. And at times, you know, I'll admit to worrying about him a little bit, not because I think he's going to like fail. Just I hope he's enjoying it. I mean, he does not play the game with that same level of joy. He plays it with a real intent. I don't know what to say other than intensity. It's not violent. I don't mean it like that. It's just like he's really, really hyper focused, intense. And I hope for him that over time that mixes back in, and I think it will, with the guy who said smell you later and some of the sort of fun, cocky, like I hope some of that is still in there. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, you can kind of compare and contrast, can't you, a little bit with the guy in right field?
He's pretty intense, too.
He lost a testicle because of his intensity. I mean, he's not
screaming cuss words.
Right.
I mean, Kelnick last night, just that 3-2, or it was a borderline pitch he strikes out on. Yeah. And he's walking back to the dugout like, ah! Oh, my gosh. Relax.
And I love him, though. I really enjoy him. And I think that you can have a guy like that on your team as long as it's offset appropriately, right? You've got to have him and J.P. Crawford and probably Julio Rodriguez. Right, you got to have some different characters.
And Munenori Kawasaki.
That might be helpful. He's an energy boy. Yeah, get an energy boy.
I am drunk.
Yeah,
I'm drunk.
Yeah, it would be probably helpful.
When you sit down,
there's Munenori.
when you sit down and have a beer with service, and you ask him about Kelnick, what do you think he's going to say?
Well, I think he's going to say, most of all, he's really good. And I really believe he is. He's at the right age. He's going to be 22 when he starts next year. I don't think he moves backwards ever again, Brock. That's not to say he doesn't slump, but I don't think we see what we saw at the beginning of this year for him, like where he looks lost. It's just not going to happen. He's now kind of got that figured out. There was nothing left for that would not have happened to him at AAA. You know, AAA is worse than it ever was. We talked a little bit about this throughout this week. Like, there's nobody there. So any bad habit that he has, he can get away with against minor league pitching because all of the any somewhat decent pitchers are already in the big leagues between expanded rosters and COVID lists and, you know, injuries back and forth. There's no one left in AAA. So whatever he was doing there, he could get away with it. He had to come up here and figure it out. And then when you find out, and I've talked to some folks who say, look, 22 to 23 is when really good players figure it out. They just take a leap. They just get better. Whether they're in the minors, the majors, doesn't matter. They get better at that age. And so next year when he comes back here at 22, I think the expectation is he's comfortable. He's figured things out. He understands how to fail. He's seen it. He's gone through and cleaned up some of his bad habits. And I think by next year, and I think Scott would say the same thing, you're going to see a Jared Kelnick that is ready to start really contributing. And maybe not carrying this team yet. He might be a year or two away from that. But really starting to show what he's made of.
And if that is the case, then is Jeff Passan right? Is it still going to be 3 to 5 years? He said that with you?
Well, no, he said that to Bishop. No, I think what Jeff means is it's 3 to 5 years before they're like the Astros, a dominant team that is spinning out, right, till everything's done and you're spinning up prospect after prospect. That doesn't mean that you can't make the playoffs next year. Okay. That doesn't mean that depending on what you do in the offseason that the next two or three can't be really fun, but that you're not a perennial, everything is working, all of these guys are at the big leagues, the machine is running
on all
cylinders.
You're no longer in the building phase in 3 to 5 years. You finished the building phase, and now you're in the maintenance phase.
Right. Gotcha. They're going to be building still for a little while, but that doesn't mean you can't get real good along the way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think next year, and especially the year after that, because I think Julio will come up next year. I don't think it's unlikely that he's a great player for them next year. Yeah, I know. But we said the same thing about Kelnick a year ago. Know. Like, it is hard to be great until you're older.
The thing that Julio Rodriguez has fundamentally different than Jared Kelnick is seemingly the ability to play loose. That's the one trait that he has. And some of the guys that you've seen with the ability to play loose that have just exploded onto the scene in baseball in the last 3 or 4 years.
It's the opposite of Mike Zunino. It's the opposite of Dustin Ackley. Right. It's a good point.
They come up and they let it go.
Still, he comes up next year at 20?
21, 22.
We'll see. No, it's not 22. It's 20.
21, I think, 24. Going into 22.
I think 24. He plays all next
the same.
Year 21.
2021.
Let's calm down on 22.
We're mixing months. We're mincing months.
All
here.
The same.
Why can't Audi just let a good point lie? You've made a good point. Why do you have to tack on with something extra? You're like Cecily. Like, hey, Dad, can we do something fun? Yes. Can we do something fun and have balloons and wrestle? And can we jump off this? Like, no, we're just going to do the first fun thing. You're just like Cecily.
You're so much like Cecily, Howdy.
You've made a good point. Why can't you just let that be enough?
You got to ride the wave.
Similarly, I heard you saying this week, Cecily was saying, oh, everybody hates me.
Oh, she had a tough day.
Everybody's mad at me.
And she had a tough day.
Oh, Pouty doesn't feel that way.
Nah, I don't really care.
Look how you're projecting it onto him.
Who cares how Pouty feels?
Oh, okay.
There were some questions when I was talking about Kelnick this week about whether or not how his teammates feel about some of the intensity. My impression is that they like it. What do you think?
Feels that way. I don't see any discord, right? I'm not sensed and watched any of those guys. Now, you know, I think a Kyle Seager and a Mitch Haniger and a Marco Gonzalez, each of those guys are wired a little bit differently too. But like you said, man, when he goes 5 for 7 with a couple homers and doubles and he's producing, when he's eaten a big old fat slice of humble pie, heck, he ate half the pie. Heck, he ate the whole pie on the back down to Tacoma when he got sent down and he came back. I think you gain a level of respect from your vets and your peers, and you come back and produce, and you know, his August numbers to his September numbers have been positive. Yeah, I don't get any stink eye, and you know, I've been looking for that.
I have too,
my psychology hat, I put that on, yes. Trying to monitor it. I don't see, hey, by the way, Julio is 20. He'll turn 21 December 29th.
Okay. So he plays all of next year at 21.
21.
Right. There'll be no 22.
Be 22 in a month after the season ends. Come on.
He'll be 22 in December.
Said, 3 months after the season.
What are you talking about? Stop exaggerating. You're just wrong. Take the L, as Justin says to me. You're wrong. You get nothing. Good day. Enough.
I said good day, sir.
Enough. You're just flat out wrong.
He'll be 21 in 22. It is what he meant.
You started at 19 to 20. I went 21, 22. Who would have known? It's right in the middle.
Amazing. Amazing.
I didn't say 19, 20. I said 20, 21. He's 19. Oh, my God. Howdy. You're an amazing human being. All right, a little potpourri to finish up here, Brock. I want to talk to you about your boy, Peyton Manning, and what he's up to. We got the Ryder Cup this week, obviously. Jordan and Justin playing together. Brooks and Bryson hugging it out, getting ready for the match. Yeah, there's a lot going on, but I got to watch you over the weekend. You were in Pullman doing a great job. I was watching the game. The Cougs were up 14-0. I fell asleep. I woke up and they were not anymore. Mm. I felt like Rip Van Winkle. What the heck happened?
Oh. 45 unanswered.
How's that happen?
So your nap coincided with Pat Chun's joke of me on the big screen.
Oh.
So he decided to welcome the broadcasting
WSU
team
athletic director,
and put
Pat
Joe
Chung.
Davis's picture up there. He told me he was going to do it the day before, and I said, oh, that'd be funny. Sure, whatever. And, put my picture up with a big purple W covering my big forehead and face. And from that moment on, I mean, just you can look at it, Cook fans. Don't yell at me.
14-0
look at
on
it.
That
from that
scoreboard.
Point, it's a 14-0 lead. That happens. Salk naps and the whole worm turns.
Yeah, I don't know that I would start saying Salk naps is like a major life thing right. That we're thinking. That happens so often that I don't know that you could use that.
He's
as
like
any-
Moses in the desert holding his arms up in the air, and as soon as he lowers it, the Israelites start to lose the battle. It's Salk's nap. When his eyes close, then the Cougs lose the battle right there.
And there you go.
And lose they did.
Ouch. Woo. What happened?
Ugh. So Kyle, since you watched it as closely as I did and these other two didn't, if USC and their freshman, gosh, I couldn't take my eyes off his eye black.
Dude.
What do you think of Jackson Dart's eye black?
I thought he didn't expect to be on national television and was like, oh no, now I made myself look like an idiot and I'm in the game.
Why is, so first, that's the best quarterback name of all time. Jackson Dart.
Dude, that's a baller.
Isn't it amazing?
Too.
That's an
unbelievable. J-A-X-O-N.
Of course. It's perfect.
Millennial.
Right?
Central casting, as Brock said.
Of course, it's going to go to USC.
But one eye black on his right eye vertically. So I heard it suggested that it was a cross. Was it a cross?
Starting at the eyebrow. No. Starts at the eyebrow.
But then maybe it's a cross with his eye.
You got to commit to.
So you don't think it's a cross
eyebrow was the cross?
Also, I will say that I don't know if it was a cross or not.
Maybe,
if I were
it didn't go above
one,
the brow?
If you were going to do one eye black, wouldn't you go with your left eye, especially if you're a righty?
Because that's your forward eye when you're in the pocket?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought this was like a TLC. Is this a Lisa Left Eye Lopes reference? Like, what are we getting?
No, it's just that's the forward eye in the pocket. That's the one that's getting the glare.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm with you. Now, there wasn't a lot of glare
on a 50
problems.
Degree rainy day.
Very cloudy, overcast.
Yeah. No. Kyle, if that dude doesn't throw a touchdown in the final minute before the first half ends, it's 14-0.
But before
it's rainy,
that,
it's cold. USC has done nothing.
If Calvin Jackson, the Cougar wide receiver, doesn't drop a touchdown in the end zone, it's 21-0 in the pouring rain, and USC players say, well, get me back to LA. I'm out of here. Instead, it's 14-0. They get a broken, busted coverage touchdown before the half, and it's a 7-point game, and we just played the worst half we've played in years. Whew. I looked at my crew at halftime. I said, we are in deep trouble. It's going to stop raining. They are in the game. This is big, big trouble. I didn't know we weren't going to score another point. I didn't know it would be 45 unanswered
You did.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, like, they're going to lose this game 38-17.
Well, you didn't know how many of the quarterbacks were going to tap out.
Well, yeah, and I didn't know we'd see the walk-on from... what is it? Archbishop Murphy, Victor Gabalis. I mean, in a different order than we saw
Chris
the quarterbacks week one and two.
It never ceases to amaze me how the Cougs can Coug it. They just know how to do it.
It's very confusing.
On epic proportions.
Would you have preferred watching that game if instead of watching Brock and Joe Davis, instead you could have watched two other people not really watching and sort of commenting on the game as if they were watching like a video game? Would that have helped make it better?
No, I'm unfamiliar with that format. What are you talking about?
Well, Brock, you were wrong. The ratings have gone up now for week two of the Manning cast. It was the highest rated thing in the history of ESPN2, the best simulcast thing that they've done, including all the stuff with the national title game, etc. I guess I'm old. I don't like it. I just don't. And it has nothing to do with the Mannings.
Wait. You're telling me that somebody did something different than how it's normally done? And you're out on it?
Yeah.
Oh, I could have never seen it coming. I could have never seen that coming. That something that you have seen and known and had serious, strong opinions and feelings about for so long, they try to do it differently, and you're out.
Everybody likes it, but guess what? Mike sucked on.
You know, you're wrong about that. I watched the simulcast for the college football thing.
Well, you don't like college football. That's not the same thing.
Well, but that's my point. Like, if you already are comfortable with the broadcast, why do I need a new one? And I don't mind that other people like it. I don't object to it existing.
Wait, are you asserting that people are nationally comfortable with the Monday Night Football broadcast? I mean, it's been like the most panned thing.
No, it was before, but I thought it kind of eased up once this new crew took over with Steve Levy, and that group's pretty good.
It's
Steve
better.
And Greasy have been working together for a few years, and you add in, what's his name?
Riddick. It's such a good broadcast.
Lewis Riddick's good. Stop. I think they do a perfectly good job.
It's not such a thing that it's like, I can't believe they were going to tweak with the Monday Night Football broadcast.
I'm not saying that.
It's been problematic. They're trying something new.
I guess all I was saying, and I like new, like, I think some other, like, I don't think you needed to go that far. I like Aqib Talib, and he's different and bringing a totally different energy towards what a play-by-play broadcast can be. But this is not a play-by-play
Let's get
broadcast.
Down to it, Mike. You were specifically offended by Pat McAfee's clothing.
No.
You do not like tank tops.
I do think
and a person appeared in a tank top.
Somebody was working and not wearing a button-up shirt.
Pat's incredibly
talented.
He probably
had a tattoo on his body.
He's very talented.
Disgusted.
And you hate the Manning, so there's nothing that they could do that you would have liked.
If this was the Hewards, I would not have felt any better.
If it was the Hasselbacks, you would have loved it. You'd loved every second of it.
I love that. Tim, I still would have watched for a couple of minutes and then been like, okay, I'm going back to the game.
Yeah. See, I'm kind of with you. I was surprised the ratings. So the ratings week one were not great. They were 800,000
I want to agree
people.
With Brock now.
Yep.
That's a great point.
But week two saw double the audience, and I'm with you. Like, I want to watch the football game. You know, Peyton does, like, dial in and you watch his eyes, it's crazy. He's got all those screens, and he's just, like, into it and discussing. If they did that the entire game, then I'd probably be pretty fascinated, as I think a lot of football fans are. But they don't. Here comes drunk Brett Favre. Here comes tank top Pat McAfee. Here comes, right? We're not even talking about what's going on during the game. So, I kind of, if I'm going to spend time. I kind of want to focus on the game.
To me, it's like having the Jumbotron, but at home. Like, instead of watching the game, which I've always enjoyed, I can now watch SimbaCam, which is fine, but I don't want that. I'm fine just watching the game. And now there's another whole... whatever.
I'm glad it's Monday Night Football, not Sunday Night Football, because one of the great joys is watching Peyton Manning just be disgusted by the quarterback play. Like, watching Jared Goff, he's just shaking his head. He's like, oh my God, this guy. When he has to watch Derek Carr, he's just... he's so mad. That's the best part. He gets a kind of a crappy matchup on Monday Night Football with bad quarterbacks.
Yep. That's pretty funny. Let's see. Ryder Cup, Brock, will start this weekend, or Thursday, really.
Where's it at? Is it at Whistling Straits?
Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Have you seen the pictures of what that place looked like before they designed
it? Did you tweet out the thread? Yeah. I saw your tweet.
Pretty awesome, isn't it?
I get most of my golf content from your Twitter.
Good spot for that. Yeah, it's at the kind Mike Salk. It's
honestly,
a really good spot for golf content.
A little bit like Chambers. Chambers went up a little bit more, but if you just carve out, you look at Chambers on the water down there in Tacoma University Place, right? And if you looked at the before and after of what they did and how much real estate they carved out, I think Whistling Straits, it feels
flatter.
Like at least, a little bit flatter and kind of extends on the water
the
a little
same
bit
idea.
More, but same idea, man.
And it looks beautiful, and, you know, what do we think about Jordan and Justin playing together?
I'm good with that. Yeah.
I am too.
I mean, if they play all matches together this weekend, they will become the most paired group couple in U.S. Ryder Cup history.
Why?
Wow.
Because before, Jordan was with Patrick Reed.
In 14.
Oh, yeah. But in 18
they
played together.
And then when Reed's in Captain America.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
And then you're going to have Cantlay, Shoffley, almost mirror images of each other.
Yes.
It's going to be a tough
group. Same human being.
And then a great pairing in DJ and Morikawa.
Yeah.
DJ's power, Morikawa's irons.
That's a pretty good tough group. I like that. What do we think about Brooks and Bryson now? I mean, Brooks is saying everything is fine. They're just setting this up to be the next match, right? Basically, they're like, here's what I imagine happened. Phil walked over to Brooks and was like, look, of course I still hate Tiger Woods, but do you see how much money I won by pretending I don't? And Brooks was like, that's all you have to do? And he's like, that's all you got to do. There are millions and millions of free dollars available to you. All you have to do is pretend to like this guy. And that's it. And Brooks is like, okay, let's go. I think it's that simple.
But do I have to pretend that I like him more than I have to pretend I like golf?
No, he doesn't pretend to like golf. He doesn't pretend to any of that. You just have to pretend to not hate Bryson DeChambeau for a short amount of time to make a lot of money. Phil's done it. He could do it. There you go. Yep. So there's that.
American's going to win. How you look at the matchups? You think they're going to win this?
I think that the European team's pretty good.
Like usual, the Americans probably have like 10 of the top 12 or 15 individual players, but they'll lose because they don't play as a team.
A lot of speculation that Victor Hovland is the secret weapon. Everybody wants to play with Victor Hovland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's who all the Euros want to play with. Want to play with Victor. So we'll see what happens. Kraken start training camp tomorrow, Brock, Thursday. Are you ready?
No.
What do you feel like you need to do to get ready? Or do you know who the line combos are going to be? Like,
no,
what will you be doing to get ready?
Oh, do you know that there are line
you.
Combos?
What will I be doing to get ready? I'll be leaning on you in this podcast, and we'll be talking about it a lot.
I'm pretty excited about it. We'll talk more about it next week. But, yeah, the whole, like, first look at a team where no one has a history there before is kind of weird and interesting. It's not like you can be like, oh, hey, last year this guy was the first-line center, and now it looks like he's on the second or third line. Like, there was no last year for any of them.
It's like watching Brandon Silvers with the Dragons. You're like, oh, my God, this is a brand-new roster to me. This is so exciting.
The what? Oh, the XFL.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
Do you
get the sense, just smelling the city and the community and the sports landscape and everything else? Will this hit like the Sounders hit? Will this hit bigger than the Sounders hit?
Do you think? It's a good question. I obviously was absolutely right about the Sounders. I said that people would forget about it in about 6 months. So as you know, I'm right on in this thing.
Yes.
Let me see. As I smell the city, which is getting easier to do when I run around Green Lake. I smell the city. I would say people right now are pretty intense and just unbelievably excited. I was talking to my buddy Chris, who has tickets, and I was like, oh, he has season tickets. So you can use yours for opening night. And he's like, yeah, absolutely. That's why I got them. I was like, oh, are you sure? Like, they're going for a lot of money. He's like, oh, yeah? I was like, well, how much would it take for you to give up your tickets for opening night? And he's like, well, you know, face value is $300 a ticket, so I don't know, $800 to $1,000 maybe. Yeah, at that point, I'd consider it. I was like, oh, cool, because they're going for $3,000 to $6,000. Per ticket for opening night. And he's like, dude, I wish you hadn't told me that. Like, he's like, I really want to go with my dad. It's a whole thing. But like $5,000? Like, wow. You got, and that's $10,000 for the two. That's $4,700 profit on each. I mean, that's a lot of money. I'm not going to continue to do more math, but like that's a pretty tough thing not to sell. So yeah, I think there are people who are going to be pretty into it. And then once you see the team and kind of are around it, you know, Lywicki does everything in such
a first-class way. Do they travel like commercial, or do they have their own plane?
No, I think they have they actually get to fly private. They're in a real league. Saw the
Sounders at Baggage Carousel 4.
They don't have their own plane.
No, I didn't say that. They a charter, like anybody else. Yeah. Oh, no, they're not. It wasn't you like won't when see I was them at in coach and the guy next to me in the middle seat played for the Sounders. That was so
Are you
sad.
Freddie Montero? Wow.
Oh, my God. I felt so bad. I thought he was like, what was that thing called? The S2? Where they had the, like, theater club. And I was like, oh, that's sad. Here's the S2 guys. But no. He played for the Sounders. And he was on, like, the middle seat on some American flight back from Dallas. Like, oh. It was like a midnight flight that I got stuck on. That poor guy. All right. Well, that's what we'll be watching. Brock, I do want to ask you about this Peterson stuff, but we're kind of running out of time for today. So you want to do that next week?
We'll do it next week. All right.
You got Chris Peterson. You got Jake Haner. Didn't we say Jake Haner was like a realistic, like probably should have won the job over?
Jacob Eason went to Florida Sock. You don't even know anything.
What happened? Didn't we think Jacob, like, Jacob Eason was terrible?
We'll talk about this next week because
this deserves a much larger conversation.
Did you see what happened when the Colts brought in Jacob Eason?
All right,
they threw a pick immediately.
No, first he threw an incompletion that was Howdy.
Where's the
head? Then he threw
Howdy. Where's
put
where's
it
the
in head? The
we gotta run. See everybody next week.
This is the chopper.